Committee on Elections and Rules. Thank you. Well, as the agenda states, we'll be dealing with Senate Bill 1008. We have dash 22, 23, and 24, and dash 13 amendments to consider and hear today. At this time, I will...
The Representative Commissioner's Office is supporting...
I'm sorry?
The Representative Commissioner's Office is supporting...
If the folks that are... I don't know that anybody's opposed to amendments. If they are, they'll be given their day in court here, or day in legislature, if you will. So first, let's start off with the dash 22s, the proponents. I have no sign-up sheet. Ben Fain, I hope I'm saying that correctly. Are you here regarding the dash 22s?
No, I'm not. I had some personal comments about the original proposal.
Just in total, in the bill as come on forward. Thank you for being here. If you can state your name for the record, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you for making this time available. My name is Ben Fain. I live in Loa. I have lived most of my 60-some years in Washington County, unincorporated Washington County. For the past 3 years, I've driven the bus for the Oregon Bus Project and been close to a lot of issues and people involved in the state legislature.
I knew you looked familiar.
I heard a lot of discussion of the urban-rural divide in Oregon and also the divide in the state legislature from extreme on one side to the other. I became aware of this bill, and I strongly support the formation of a PED to administer the operations of PGE. In the Oregon Statesman Journal, on the 19th of June, there was a quote that said, PGE's roots go back to 1889 when the company took electricity generated at Willamette Falls and transmitted it to Portland. The end of the quote, but here are some other facts. PGE territory covers about 4,000 square miles and 51 cities. We have a unique opportunity to form a PED to purchase PGE and to oversee its management. I feel this is not a partisan issue. It is not just a city of Portland issue, and it does affect a large portion of the state economy. I feel that the governor and the Senate president and the Speaker of the House should support this bill. We need a strong state Department of Energy. PGE is a functioning, growing business with a captive customer base. It will continue to operate whomever owns it. It can pay its own way, and ownership is the urgent issue. And I feel like a PUD is the answer to that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being here today. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you again for being here. I look forward to seeing the bus project in a district near me soon.
No near.
That's funny.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion. I don't think I have any control of that. We'll hear the dash 22s now. Does anybody in here speaking in favor? The dash 22 amendments. Don't be shy.
24.
There's only room for one shy person here, and that's me. So,
Mr. Chair, Kate Richardson, not known to be shy, Chief of Staff for the State Treasurer, and I'm here to speak to the dash 22. Well, actually, I'm here to introduce Cynthia Burns, our counsel at DOJ, to speak to them. A number of these were in consultation with us, and I will have Cynthia just give a brief overview of that.
The
Good morning, Chair Kitts, member, or afternoon, Chair Kitts and members of the committee. Cynthia Burns from the Attorney General's Office. I am here mainly to answer any questions that you may have and sort of briefly explain what I think the impact is of the Dash 22s from the original versions of this bill from a bonding perspective and a state bonding perspective. The way the bill is now structured, I think these bonds would be similar to bonds issued by a local government. They would not be obligations of the state of Oregon, certainly not general obligation bonds issued by the state of Oregon with our full faith and credit behind it. They would be a form of revenue bonds, which would be paid solely from revenues of the Oregon Public Power entity. And the statutes under which they would be issued are mostly the statutes that are applicable to local government type bonds. So the state treasurer's office would not be involved in the same capacity that he is now with regular state of Oregon bonds. There is a format where this entity could seek assistance from the treasurer's office if they wanted to, but they would mostly be on their own in terms of doing their borrowing authority. And I'll add a second change that was made is that their banking arrangements would continue to look largely private.
Okay. Thank you. Representative March?
So just to clarify then, the language in the Dash 22, since it basically replaces the bill, just went in to clarify the part to that these any bonds issued by Oregon Community Power would not be GO bonds of the state, and the state's not obligated to pay.
Yeah, Representative March, members of the committee, that's true. The way this bill has always been structured, they would be revenue bonds, but now they would not really be revenue bonds of the state of Oregon revenues to pay them. This is more akin to a separate entity, like a local government or something.
Thank you.
Just briefly, Chairman Kitts, for the record, my name is Joe McNutt. I'm also with the Attorney General's office, and I'm here just to answer any questions that the committee might have with respect to Section 23 in the 822 amendments. Section 23 is a new section to the bill, and it's intended to deal with a potential constitutional problem with the bill as previously drafted, and specifically that problem is that the Oregon Constitution prohibits the state from holding stock. Right. And there have been some Oregon cases addressing that constitutional provision. One of the leading cases was a case known as Sprague versus Straub that upheld the state's ability to hold stock in the Public Employees Retirement Fund and in the Industrial Accident Fund. And in that case, the Supreme Court addressed the various pertinent elements that the court felt were important in order to allow the state to end up holding stock in a dedicated trust fund and not run afoul of constitutional prohibition. So as I understand, the intent behind Section 23 is that it is intended to deal with that constitutional issue. And just walking through the subsections, what the first subsection addresses is that basically if equity is acquired or it's necessary to acquire equity in Portland General Electric Company through the acquisition that occurs under Section 20 of the Act, that that stock or any of the physical assets acquired under Section 20 would be basically held in trust for the benefit of the consumers of Oregon Community Power. Secondly, similar to the situation with the Public Employees Retirement Fund and the Industrial Accident Fund, the state would declare that it has no proprietary interest in that fund and would disclaim any right to reclaim any contributions that may be made to Oregon Community Power under some other sections of the Act, basically the startup costs. And finally, it basically states that Oregon Community Power will not receive any funds from the state other than funds that might come from providing electrical services to the state, just as those would be provided to any other customer, the associated public purpose charges, and if somehow down the road, if the treasurer was ever involved in doing any bond financing or loan financing for Oregon Community Power, that those non-recourse financings would not be subject to this prohibition. So that's basically the idea behind the provision and the reason for each of the elements.
Thank you for that. President Colby?
Thank you. Is it your understanding that there would be no way for, given that hypothetically that Oregon Community Power does acquire the assets of Portland General Electric, would they ever be able to transfer any equity to another entity other than selling stock, I suppose?
Well, Chair Kitz, Representative Holvey, the idea would be that if Oregon Community Power acquires, let's say, the equity of Portland General Electric Company, it would end up holding that stock or any of the assets that came with that stock in trust for the benefit of the ratepayers. That and basically would be establishing something in the nature of a perpetual trust, and that unless and until the legislature made some future changes down the road with regard to the operation of Oregon Community Power, that Oregon Community Power, you know, could not be doing anything with regard to that stock other than something that would be consistent with this trust relationship. And so I can't say that they would never dispose of the stock or retire the stock or do anything else, but whatever they would do with regard to that stock would have to be consistent with this trust relationship and trust obligation. And it may be very difficult to conceive of a situation where, and it could satisfy the trust obligations and dispose of certain parts of the stock, but that's a question I don't think has been specifically raised previously.
So your answer is no. Oh, never mind. No,
answer is qualified, maybe not.
Okay. Any other? Thank you. Dash 23, is that DOJ? Who has the Dash 23 amendments?
Say that was the governor's office.
Oh, the governor. Forgot about him. The colleagues, are there any questions on the Dash 23 amendments?
Who would I address it to? Do you know about it?
I briefly looked at it. Is anybody here to speak on behalf of the Dash 23s? Dexter, maybe you could come forward.
Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. I'd be happy to walk through the 23s with you, though I'm not speaking on
them
behalf of them.
Right. I understand.
Basically, the Dash 23s, although they create a public corporation called Oregon Community Power, they kind of suspend the operation of it until the governor decides to convene a first board, and that can happen at any time. The amendments also modify the process by which members of the board are actually appointed. In the Ann Gross bill, there's a nominating committee the bill specifies who is on the nominating committee. The nominating committee then nominates an initial slate of candidates for the OCP board.
Dexter, do you have a copy of the 23s?
I do.
Okay.
And the amendment eliminates all of that and basically streamlines it so that the governor nominates, the governor appoints members without input from any formal nominating committee. The other key feature in the dash 823s is that the acquisition, the direction to go and acquire either an electric utility company or assets of an electric utility are not not as directive in the dash 823s. It simply states that the OCP board may enter into negotiations, and if negotiations are successful, may then go and acquire, and not just PGE, but any, it doesn't name any particular utility, but any electric utility or electric utility assets. Those are the primary, those are the key differences. There's no timeline. It's really changes it so that the governor can activate this process, and there's no specific, it's not PGE oriented, unlike the bill itself.
So, Dex, if I'm looking at line 10 of the bill on page 1 under section 4, Oregon community power may be activated only upon action by the governor to appoint a board of directors of Oregon community power and convene the first meeting of the board. In theory, if Portland were to acquire Portland General Electric, the provision here where in the bill that directs Portland to turn over or at some point in time be turned over to Oregon Community Power, that would only take place then if in fact the governor even activated Oregon Community Power?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Under the A23 amendments, nothing happens until the governor first makes a determination that the governor is going to activate OCP.
I see Peter stepped in. Peter, do you want to talk to these amendments, or are you just here to observe? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Peter Cogswell. I'm the Deputy Chief of Staff in the Governor's Office, and I'm also serving as Energy Advisor. These amendments actually arose out of an initial conversation that I had with Dexter, just trying to think through what some different options might be in terms of how to trigger Oregon Community Power to actually acquire a utility. So I just saw them this morning for the first time. I've looked at them briefly. I don't know how... I don't know if they're all the way there in terms of... I still need to talk to Dexter and some other folks, obviously, before, you know, I think that they are complete.
The question... I'm looking at the dash 23s here, and then I'm also... I have open over here on my dash 22s. On section 20... of the dash 22s, it says Oregon Community Power shall enter into negotiations with the Portland General Electric Company or persons that have authority to negotiate the disposition of the Portland General Electric Company or the electric utility assets of the Portland General Electric Company. Is there a conflict there?
Mr. Chair, there is. And that actually highlights more of a general comment that I'd like to make for the committee. You have a number of amendments under consideration here, and You can adopt any or all of them, but there will have to be some blending done that will be maybe a little bit beyond what is normally done in order to do that.
Okay. Dexter, if you could just help me be a little bit more, I guess, specific, because what I'm dealing with is I've got the 24s here, which is dealing with payments and completely separate issues. I've got the 23s, which is obviously the governor's office amendments, which I think we've highlighted that may need some a little bit of work. If I'm reading this bill correctly, if negotiations result in, and I'm sorry, section 20 referring to sub 2, it says if negotiations result in an agreement between Oregon Community Power and an electric utility, the bill starts to go beyond the scope of what I would perceive is a PGE acquisition, which would you see that as the same thing?
Mr. Chair, is your question, I think the dash A23s are not PGE specific in the way they are written. The A22s are. The A22s require Oregon Community Power to begin negotiations with PGE or Enron or whoever is the appropriate party. Does not require that they actually go and acquire. That's only if negotiations are successful. By contrast, in the A23s, there's merely a direction that they may do this, not that they're required to begin negotiations.
So, just again, I apologize. In theory, if this committee were to adopt the A23s, the governor could tomorrow, if he wanted to, upon the acquisition, the day after, 10 years after, it's complete latitude that's in the governor's hands, correct?
Mr. Chair, as the dash A23s are drafted, yes. Whether that reflects the governor's intent.
But as I'm reading it, that so whether this governor does anything or not, or I mean, this allows any governor to begin this process when they so choose. Is that I'm trying to just make sure that I understand this correctly,
Mr. Chair? Yes.
Okay. And so again, the 23s would directly conflict with the 23s would directly conflict with the 22s because the 22s say that Oregon Community Power shall. So this is assuming that upon passage of the bill, that number one, that Oregon Community Power is actually a viable option, not requiring the governor's trigger to be pulled, also requiring, mandating that they shall enter into negotiations with the Portland General Electric Company or persons that have authority to negotiate, i.e. Portland. Am I distinguishing the two? You couldn't pass both these. It's almost one or the other.
Mr. Chair, conceptually they stand for different things. The dash A22s really, although they are a gut and stop and that they replace the entire contents, they're mainly directed at the financing for how Oregon Community Power would pay for an acquisition, and they address the treasurer changes that the treasurer is interested in. The A23s are changes how the Oregon Community Power is actually activated, and the mandatoriness of going out and negotiating. You could adopt both amendments in concept, and a blended amendment, and this is going to have to be, I think, required with all of the amendments that you have before you. There's going to need to be a blended amendment that will put everything together that you should look at before, and that's the amendment that you would actually formally pass out of committee because there's many different concepts before you.
colleagues, realizing that I have a track record of not approving or being supportive of all amendments that are put in committee, I will say that I don't feel that I have a grasp of the amendments at this time, that I would be open to the committee if they understand these far better than I. I know that Senator Deckard is here. I know that this is the first that I've seen of the Dash 23s, and I would like to have conversations, maybe not necessarily in this forum, because I don't think it's necessarily appropriate for us to learn the bill in front of everybody, giving us some time. Would the committee be opposed to adjourning this committee now and scheduling in lieu of time with the 24-hour time restraint so that it doesn't go any further, and rescheduling for tomorrow at 1:45, giving us more time? We have a work session. Unless there's further people that wish to testify in this public hearing now on these, because we'll schedule for a work session.
Frank, so you're in 1 hour for a work session?
Okay.
You're on 1 hour notice. You're home in the morning.
Does the committee feel that they need a few more? I mean, I think we're dealing with some pretty comprehensive stuff here, and it's not the intent for the chair just to simply stuff things in. We think this committee's worked hard enough on this amendment. I don't think 24 hours is going to kill anybody.
Mr. Chair, I know we're running into some time problems. Will we have a chance to get a blend on? Let's see, we've already adopted 12, 14, and 18. If we adopt two of these, the recommendation is that we have a way to get them into a single blended amendment. I'm not sure we have the time to. The schedule better than we do.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I would suggest that they don't know what they're blending until the committee passes the amendments, and I think that until the committee actually more thoroughly understands the amendments that are being proposed here, do we now have a direction of what amendments to push. Representative March.
As I see it, we have two sets of technical amendments. The Department of Revenue's amendment only deals with sections 17 and how the in-lieu taxes are assessed and collected. That one's a real technical amendment. Although 822 looks like a big amendment, it's also a technical amendment relating to the financing of the process and clarifying that the state's not on hook for GO bonds. The real conceptual or philosophical, shall we say, or policy-oriented amendment is the A23s, and that deals with how this process is activated and whether or not we make it narrow or broad. And so I think, I'd see, the 22 and 24 as merely making sure it works for the state of Oregon. And so the policy issue is the one that we need to talk about, is it broader than just PGE, and how do we activate it?
Thank you, Representative March. Are there any other comments?
That also may...
Representative Greenlee?
Thank you, sir. That also may lead to the question of whether we would like the LC to break that A22 into at least two components, one relating to the activation and one relating to the scope. And if we have a day, that might be something that would be worth doing, so we could view them as separate concepts and adopt both of them or one or the other.
You know what? I'm going to ask that would the schedule of the committee permit for a recess until 3 o'clock?
Sure.
Okay. Committee will stand at ease until 3 o'clock.